Okay, I would like you to turn to 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 9 and 10. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 9 and 10. Another very short passage, but one I hope that will become one of your favorite passages. This is page 900 in the English Bible. 1 Peter chapter 2, I'll be reading verses 9 and 10. After speaking of those who have rejected Jesus Christ, Peter writes, "But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now, have you heard the expression, a better version of myself, or the best version of myself? Have you heard that expression that goes around quite a bit? As you can guess, I've been doing a lot of reading and studying to prepare for last week's marathon. And I'm going to tell you something, that there is a lot more to running than just running. There's a whole lot more. There's basic running, sort of going nice and slow for long distances. Those are good. Then there's the faster running, the runs where you mix things up with drills. But then there's also nutrition. I feel like I've gotten like a master's degree in nutrition over this last year or so. Protein, good fats, bad fats, carbohydrates, and of course, hydration. Sort of messed that one up a little bit last week, but nicely recovered. But on top of all the exercise, the sleep and recovery and nutrition, there's the mental or psychological element of training. So they say that training our minds is almost as important as training our bodies. There's talk of, this is all new to me, that your future self thanking your present self for exercising self-discipline and self-control and exercising hard. So get ready. Your future self may just show up and say thank you to you. There's talk of practicing gratitude, particularly in times of discouragement, that when things are getting tough, you adopt the practice of gratitude. You just say thank you. Now, they're not saying say thank you to God. They're just saying be thankful. And again, very helpful. And that did help around mile 19. I love this one line about not getting in our own way. Do you ever feel like you get in your own way? And this person says, by allowing ants to crawl around in our minds. That's just repulsive, isn't it? Ants crawling around in your mind. Well, ants stands for automatic negative thoughts. Isn't that good? Automatic negative thoughts. Some of us just go negative. We're not even trying to do it. Something happens, maybe something doesn't happen. We just wake up and we can just, it's like we've got an ant farm going around digging trails and tunnels in our hearts and minds. Many people use running and all these components to become a better version of themselves. And it's interesting because I imagine it's not too hard for running to stop being something that's just fun or challenging or even just exercise into moving into almost like a self-help, almost like an alternate religion where we save ourselves or we somehow become this better version of ourselves. So right now, are you the best version of yourself? don't look at someone else and give them a frown. I'll confess that last week around mile 22, 23, definitely not a particularly attractive version of myself. The wheels were coming off, muscles were tightening up. And while exercise and nutrition and positive thinking can take us a long way to making the most of our abilities and even the ability to make the most of our circumstances, however good or difficult they might be, I believe God has even more for his people. Running is great, but God has way more for us than simply trying our hardest and doing our best. The Lord wants us to experience the truly best version of ourselves. It's who he says we are. And from this passage, I describe it as possessed by him, we have a purpose. We have purpose and a pardon. So possessed by God. Have you ever seen yourself as belonging to the living God? But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Possessed by God, chosen, not rejected. Fernando described a glimpse of what it was like to be looking for a job and to be on the other side of waiting and experiencing rejection. But he's not the only one. Every one of us could talk about what it's like to be picked last. Or if we weren't picked last on the schoolyard, we were afraid we were going to be picked last. And we were sure that we should have been picked last. And too bad for them that they got it this time and we got out early in the selection process. Every one of us knows what it's like to be rejected. Even if it's simply an idea we have, we think it's a great idea, but someone else shoots us down. We know what it's like to be rejected because of maybe how we appear. I remember my mother telling me what it was like to grow up as an Armenian in Fresno. And not be identified as an Armenian, but as a Fresno Indian. We know what it's like to be rejected. Do you know what it's like to be chosen? I get one of the greatest privileges that anybody could ever have when I do premarital counseling. And I ask the couple every time to describe why the other person is the most blessed person on the planet. And you know what's really funny? No one ever gets it right. No one ever answers that question. What do they start talking about? How blessed they are to be able to be marrying this person, and oh, isn't it wonderful? And I said, no. You didn't hear the question. Why are they the most, and the looks on apparently very self-confident people, successful people, sometimes even cocky people, they just go mute. What do you say? What? And I said, it's okay, brag a little bit. And it takes, everything I've got to get it out of them, why someone else would be blessed to have been chosen by them. Do you know what it's like to be picked, to be the one that someone calls when they're in need? That it was your ear that they wanted. They wanted you to know what was going on in life. Do you know what that's like to be chosen in that way? Do you know what it's like for someone to rejoice that at Christmas time or another gift giving that they've pulled your name, that they get to bless you? We get a little weird about this, and we always fight accusing God of evil. But if you are a child of God, it's because he chose you first. Now don't think, oh, yeah, of course. Of course he'd choose me. No, no. Be like that couple in my office when they're doing premarital counseling. Be honest for 1 second to say, there is no reason I should be chosen. And it's true. There is no reason in ourselves that we would be chosen by God. But the scripture, our church's Reformed tradition emphasizes it in a way that I absolutely love. But if you are a child of God, it's because God chose you when you were in darkness. And he said, mine. And I know some of you are saying, but stop with the buts for just a moment. Would you please rejoice that you are chosen before the foundation of the universe, before the foundation of creation, before you could do anything? God has chosen you to be his own. You are not rejected. You're chosen. And you know, we're told that we're a royal priesthood. Some of you are probably wondering, why is Bodvili wearing the collar today? Why is he doing that? Some of you have never even seen me wear what I call my uniform. But when I was in Boston, I had to have the collar because the community is a little bit more conservative, and if I was going to be recognized as an Armenian clergyman, if I showed up in my white shirt, and even if it was a really nice tie, you'd be like, who's that guy? Or as someone said once, who's the short guy up there with the dead hairs? That's me. So I got the uniform so people in the community could recognize me as one of the, oh, he's one of the clergy. He's one of the priests. And I love it. I think I've told you how the Persians, because they grew up in Iran, when the church they were most familiar with was the Catholic or the Armenian Orthodox Church. And so they would say, Father Greg, Father Greg. And whenever I'd wear the collar, they'd say, okay, now you're looking like you're supposed to look. But I'm wearing this because historically, clergy would wear the collar to distinguish them, to distinguish themselves from everybody else so that the common people could know this is the person that represents me to God. They're the ones who pray for me. They're the ones who would offer sacrifices. They're the ones who I could be with in coming to God. But I'm wearing this today as a contrast, because this collar represents the common clergyman, the one who's with the commoners. But you're a royal priesthood. You are children of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. No collars. None of us are higher than others. And while the priest represents the people before God, you as a royal priesthood, and we'll talk about this in just a moment, you represent the king in coming to the people, announcing his excellencies. See, you are royalty. Have you ever met royalty? Anybody ever stood in line in Buckingham Palace to try to see the palace or been to another place where it's royalty? Oh, that person's royalty. Some of us have even, I know a couple friends who, they did the 23andMe, you know what I'm talking about, the chromosome thing? Because they think they're royalty. Whether one was Prussian, one was convinced he was part of the English line of royalty. I have a friend who's convinced that 8 centuries ago, his ancestors were part of the Armenian princes. And he looks at me and says, you know, tough luck for you. I'm Armenian royalty. It's like, okay, you can be Armenian royalty. I am royalty. You are royalty, children of the King of Kings. It's wonderful. You're a holy nation. You're not used. You're not pre-owned. God doesn't look at you and say, oh, you're pre-owned. Is there a guarantee that comes with that? He doesn't do that. He looks at you as holy, set apart for him, and anything that is in your past does not stain you. Nothing. And I know you're thinking, yeah, Vaudeville, I wish it was like that. I really wish it was, but you don't know my background. Actually, I do, for a lot of you. And you know my background. You knew me 20 years ago. And you still come, because you don't come for me. You come to worship together the living God. We are a holy nation. It has nothing to do with our birthright. It has nothing to do with your chromosomes. We have become a holy nation in Jesus Christ. And it's not Armenian. That's not the core of who you are. You are the people of God. And you're not used. And I want you to understand that you are not used. You're not just renewed. You are transformed. And believe it or not, you resemble Jesus more than you do who you used to than more you than you would resemble who you used to be. Finally, possessed by God, you're his special personal possession. You weren't leftovers. You weren't the last piece on the plate. It's like, okay, I guess I'll just take that. Everything else wasn't sold out. And he said, well, okay, I guess that doesn't really fit. But that's the one that's on sale. That's not you. God sees you the way you would say, you know what? If I had all the money in the world, I would buy this. I can't really afford it, but if I won the lottery, then that's how he looks at you. As a child, some of you know, I used to hide my treasured possessions in the back of my sock drawer. That way Paul wouldn't steal them or say they were his. Some people show their best possessions. Some of us are a little bit show-off. It's like we drive this or we wear this. Some of us show it off, some of us hide it, but we have the things we treasure the most. And it wouldn't take us long to know what those are. I have a close friend who just escaped the Houston flooding. You know what they left with? Their prized possessions. And I want you to take this to heart. If God was fleeing a flood, he'd take you. Own that. If God has to take his most precious possession, he takes you. It's not the Cathedral of Notre Dame. It's not St. Paul's. No, it's you. Are you possessed by God? Do you realize that you belong to him? In my church in college, the communion table had written on the front, purchased with a price. God's love for you is so great that his son offered his life so that we might belong to him. Do you realize that you are possessed? The best version of myself is someone who completes a marathon in 5 hours? I don't think so. The best version of myself, like you, is chosen, royal, holy, and special. That's who you are. You're possessed by God. But that's not all. You're also purposed by God. You're purposed by God. I love how he says it, that you're his special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Do you realize that that is your purpose? As a royal priesthood, your purpose in life is to declare the excellencies of the living God. Making a lot of money, good job. Do your best to be successful, but don't make that your number one goal. An effective teacher, communicator, fantastic, but that's not your number one goal. Work hard in your professions. Let your words and your actions declare his praises. To declare his praises. Please never forget that you were called out of darkness. You and I were called out of darkness into light. Yes, that darkness is sin. Yes, that darkness is ignorance. Yes, that darkness is blindness by the evil one. But he has rescued us. When you get down on yourself, when you start seeing yourself and you only see the negative things and the ants are crawling all over your heart and your mind, you've got to remember that, you know what? I was in darkness, but now it's light. He has taken me out of darkness and into light, and I don't have to be afraid of the light. You don't have to be afraid of what the light will show. See, we have a purpose. We have a purpose that we can declare his praises. Do you look at other people like this? Do you think about the colleagues that really irritate you? Or your neighbors? Or your children's friends' parents? Do you look at them as potential royalty? Or do you just look at them like pain in the, yeah. The people who seem to be getting in your way when you're trying to accomplish something, how do you view them? Do you view them with the arrogance that, oh, I'm in the light now, look at them. There, are you ready? Unbelievers. Really? That's how we're going to talk about those who have yet to know the grace and love of Jesus, with that tone of voice? Yes, they are. The category is they're in darkness. They don't know Christ yet. But does it have to have that tone of voice? Can it not have a sound or a intonation of sorrow? Can it not have compassion? Do you not remember? Do you not remember what it's like to have no hope and to be without God in the world? Do you not remember what that's like? If you don't remember what that's like, I wonder if you've been rescued from darkness to light. See, that's our calling, to declare his praises. God has a purpose for us, and it's not just individually, it's us as a congregation to declare his excellencies. Let people know that God is so amazing, he's forgiven you. Because see, we have a pardon. We are pardoned by God, possessed by God. We have a purpose, and we have a pardon. And Peter quotes Hosea, and we were once not a people. We were once, you know the story of Hosea? Hosea was a prophet who was called to go marry a prostitute. Don't think Hosea's mom and dad were too excited about that engagement. And I wonder what premarital counseling would have looked like for them. I really don't think you're a match. You're a prophet and she's not so much. Not sure how this is going to work out for the kids, but their kids were named Not My People and Not Mercy. See, if you're a Gentile, which is what we are, hearing Peter's words, I was not welcome in the people of God. Do you know that we could not have entered the presence of the living God before Christ without going through a number of very rigorous processes? Once not a people, but now the people of God. Once not recipients of mercy. Not recipients of mercy. But now, recipients of mercy. Again, therefore we treat other people mercifully, graciously, compassionately. This last week, I finished an incredible book called Left to Tell. The writer is Immaculée Ilibagazi. She is a survivor of the Rwandan genocide. And I confess, I was very ignorant about what happened in Rwanda in 1994. But Immaculée describes her 91 days being protected by, she was Tutsi, she was protected by a Hutu pastor with seven other women initially, and then in the last month with eight other women. There were nine of them in a 3-foot by 4-foot bathroom. And they couldn't speak, they couldn't make any noise, because death squads came almost daily looking for her. Can you imagine hiding in a bathroom? There's a wardrobe put in front of the door. Can you imagine hiding in a bathroom, not being able to make any sound, body covered with lice, you haven't showered in who knows how long since this has happened, you're jammed together, and people are outside and they're yelling out, "Where's Immaculée? We haven't killed her yet." One man cried out, "I've killed 399 Tutsi. Immaculée would be a wonderful one to be the 400th. Can you imagine the fear and the terror that would come over you? This pastor protected them. Can you imagine the temptation to see yourself not as a chosen people, but cursed because of your tribe? Can you imagine yourself not seeing yourself as a royal priesthood, but abandoned by God? Can you imagine yourself not seen as holy, beloved of God, but as a cockroach, worthy only to be killed, not as God's precious possession, but someone who's been cast off? As Immaculée was in that little room, she kept praying, "God, stop these animals. Stop them, stop them, stop them," until the Holy Spirit communicated to her as she would pray the Lord's Prayer every hour, every minute. "Forgive them, Lord." Can you imagine that? She said that when she would pray the Lord's Prayer, she would simply remove that as she prayed. And you can understand that, right? I mean, some of us do the same thing, and we're not enduring a genocide. We think we're somehow excused from forgiving, especially if the people are mean. In that sanctuary, she prayed, "Lord, forgive them." Because she saw herself as a recipient of God's mercy. That's how she saw herself. And if you and I see ourselves as recipients of God's mercy, we don't ask for judgment on others. We can be those who dispense mercy, who can dispense forgiveness. See, what doesn't make sense to most people is what we're doing with these Turkish leaders and Turkish pastors. So many of my friends are thinking, "Badville, you've just gone too far this time." When Pastor Yüksel spoke to us, I had someone get right in my face, a little closer than my personal space likes. Their face was about this far, and their finger was like in between it, saying, "How dare you let a Turk in an Armenian church? How dare you?" See, we were once not a people, but now we're the people of God. You were once not a recipient of mercy, but now you are a recipient of mercy. Immaculée tells a story. 2 years later, after the genocide was stopped, she went to the prison. It's hard to tell. She went to the prison and asked the warden to see the person who led the attacks against her family, who slaughtered her brothers. And as the warden brought him in, he threw the guy on the ground and said, "You look up to her and you beg her for forgiveness. You tell her why you did what you did. You tell her how you thought you were worthy to slaughter her family. Go ahead." And he was just yelling at him, screaming at the guy. And Immaculée was taken back by it. He made the man stand and said, "You look in her eyes." But the man couldn't look at her eyes. He was covered in shame because it was the man who was standing outside the bathroom saying it would be good if Immaculée was number 400. The one who searched for her specifically to kill her. The man made him look at her. The warden made him look at her. And her only words to him were, "I forgive you." The man collapsed. For the first time, sobbing uncontrollably. The warden grabbed him, threw him out, came back, and started yelling at Immaculée. "What did you just do? How dare you forgive the one who slaughtered? You don't have that right." You know what she said? "No, I have that privilege. Who are you? Are you possessed by God, His chosen, His special possession? Are you purposed by God to declare His praises? Have you experienced His pardon?" That's what we celebrate right now, the pardon we have in Jesus Christ. That's the best version of who we can ever be. Amen.